Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Podcast Network Asia.
What's going on? This is Xavier Woods, aka Austin Creed.
Welcome to the big time!
Hello, WWE Universe in the Philippines. This is Charlotte.
You know your damn role, and shut your damn mouth!
Hey everyone, this is Jeff Cobb.
I have to finish the story.
We are pretty deadly. Yes, boy. Yes, boy.
Hello, my name is Ilya Dragunov, the star.
Bang! The sniper is shooting you down. This is TMDK's Robbie Eagles, and you are listening to the Wrestling Podcast.
Listening to the longest running weekly episodic Filipino wrestling podcast. This is the Wrestling Podcast. Stan C, Romaran, Gina Liao on a special audio only episode where we've got another guest that we've been really excited to talk to. And man, we got way more than we bargained for. And we've got the great Carlo Cash Money Cannon. Sulit Bayad. Carlo Sulit Bayad Cannon, if we're going to have him here in Manila. He's here on the pod, and man, we just got to talking about so much.
Yeah, very insightful conversation with Carlo Cannon here, who just talks about everything and anything we just ask him. What an open book, that guy.
Yeah, I actually, if we had more time, actually, I say, Shemper, we're recording this in the middle of a work day, and I'm not like these two. So if we had more time, I would have probably done like the old two-parters, the interview. So, man, that guy has so, I want to pick his brain now. Like, now I'm going to sign up for his classes online.
Yeah. Make that two of us at least here on this podcast, who's very interested in, being part of Carlo Cannon's learning tree. You'll get to hear about his story, how he started in the business, how his being Filipino played a part in his journey as a pro wrestler. And of course, the usual questions about Filipino representation in pro wrestling and how he wants to grow the scene here in Southeast Asia. All of that coming up in a bit, but first, gotta remind you about a couple of things. First off, Patreon, always a good thing to be part of our growing Wrestling Podcast patron community, where we've got your watch parties, you've got the pasabays, and you've got the vibrant community that we are cultivating over on Discord. If you want to be a part of that, it's patreon.com/wrestlingpodcast for about $5 a month, or about a little over 260 pesos, and you get all the benefits of being a Wrestling Podcast patron. We've also got our regular Thursday live streams happening at 7 p.m. Facebook and YouTube is Wrestling Podcast. That's where you can find us and be part of the watering hole every Thursday at 7 p.m. All right, time for us to get to the main event. Here's our conversation with Carlo Cash Money Cannon. Really excited and thrilled to be bringing you this week's interview on an audio-only episode of the Wrestling Podcast. Big shout-out first to friend of the podcast, Miles Caru from IPW, for helping make this interview possible. It's about damn time that we have another Filipino pro wrestler here on the pod. He's been making waves for the last decade plus in Australia, and now he's here on the Wrestling Podcast. Please welcome to the pod the great Carlo Cannon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Carlo, thank you so much for making time. we got to start with the check-in first. How's everything going on your end?
Things are really good, man. Things are really, really good. I think after last year, I had a very tumultuous start last year. And this year, ever since January, it's been up and up. I just like telling you guys, I moved into a new apartment. So my views here are incredible. And things are finally on the rise. I've been doing this for a long time now. So it's been, you know, what wrestling and life is like, peaks and valleys. And right now things are peaky. Let's just say that.
It's a great way to, a great place to be at. We're so happy to see the success that you've had in the scene. And it's always great to have representation for us Filipinos, especially since it's no secret that we're kind of biologically disadvantaged in our chosen sport, right? So I guess to start things off on your end, where did this dream to get inside the ring begin for you?
So when I was a lot younger, my parents moved from the Philippines to Australia to give me a better life. So my mom was pregnant with me when she moved to Australia, and they gave up their big cushy jobs and really good life. Philippine Airlines, they both worked for Philippine Airlines.
Wow.
They moved here to give me a better start. So, you know, they moved into the country. Dad went from, you know, doing a lot of the airport stuff, making a lot of money, to pushing trolleys in a little country town in Australia. So they moved here to give me a better life. And they took me back to the Philippines many times when I was younger to humble me, to remind me how, I don't know if that's a common thing, but they brought me back probably many times when I was younger. And my parents both from Manila. So my dad's Ilocano. So when we would drive back home, I would see like a lot of the struggles and how poor it was. We'd walk down to the well to get the water for the tabo, and we could shower in the tabo. Like it was, I was very humbled when I was young, and I was very appreciative growing up. So when I was 5 years old and I started to find wrestling, I found it because my uncle borrowed a video from the VHS store. That's how long ago it was, and it showed me wrestling. And I remember I wasn't necessarily bullied too much, but I didn't have any friends. I came in through primary school and I didn't know anyone. And my uncle showed me wrestling. And the first thing I ever saw was the Big Boss Man. And I came handcuffing Hulk Hogan to the ropes and just beating him up. And my uncle was very angry. My tito was, oh man, he was screaming at the TV. And I was happy because he's like, you know, we don't like this. We like Hulk Hogan. And I was like, nah, these guys are smart. I'd handcuff him too. So I think I was naturally a heel growing up. I already knew. And from there, I brought it to show and tell, and people started liking me. I don't think the parents liked it too much because I introduced their kids to violence, but all the kids started to like me. I had something to talk about, and they let me read books. You know, they let me do stuff with wrestling. They let me read wrestling books to help me start reading. And then that's all I wanted to do. And then when I turned 16, I told my parents I want to be a wrestler. And they thought I'd grow out of it and become a doctor or a nurse or a lawyer or all the other professions that they hoped you'd become when you moved to Australia. But that's all I wanted to do. So I contacted the Hart family in Calgary. And because I wanted to be just like Lance Storm. So Lance Storm, when I was younger, was my favorite, believe it or not. Because I watched ECW and I saw him, and because he jumped in WCW, I was the only one that knew who he was, right? Mm-hmm. So because I knew him and no one else did, I claimed him. I'm like, oh, that's my guy then. I know him. You guys don't know him. So everything, I've got my year 9 diary and it says Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So I figured I'm going to follow in his footsteps and I'm going to go to Calgary, get trained by the Harts, do everything that he did. And at 16, they told me to wait till I was 18 before I became a before I chased it, and that's what I did. I waited until I was 18. I studied. I got my first job as a debt collector at 18, calling people on the phone to collect money, saved up all this, saved everything, and I moved to Canada at 18 to train with the Hart family. And that didn't go to plan, but I ended up being trained by Lance himself in his very first class in 2005.
I got a question, though. You mentioned that your parents were not they wanted you to grow out of it. But what did they say when you told them that you wanted to be a wrestler? And then eventually when you wanted to do it more than just part-time?
You know, my parents, I'm very lucky. So my parents have been very supportive of everything I do. I think they've just wanted me to be happy and wanted me to chase whatever I wanted, regardless of what it was. I think I learned now that they came to Australia not to make me rich and famous or whatever. They moved here to make sure that I was happy. and get opportunities that they didn't have growing up. So I remember, here's a good little Filipino story for you. There's a lot of Filipino dinner dancers here. I don't know, but when I get down, but over here, it's like, there's a lot of dinner dancers. Growing up, my parents were very heavily involved in the Filipino community. And, as you know, sometimes the Filipino community can be very, pretentious at times. They're very like spending a lot of stuff on designer clothes and bragging about their kids. And so I remember sitting there at this dinner dance with my parents and all the other parents are talking about their kids and their grades and the doctors and all that stuff. And I sat there and I was like, oh man, like this is, I'm trying to be a wrestler. And they'd still brag about all the stuff that I wanted to do. And I was doing very well in school. And I remember on the way home, I was actually really sad. And I said, are you guys embarrassing me? Because like, you know, all these parents talk about, you know, their kids are being lawyers and their doctors. And I said, no, we're so proud. And we know you're going to do amazing things. So don't ever feel like that. So I've been very, very blessed and very lucky. I'm the person I am today because of my parents. So they were so supportive, which is, I don't know, quite strange. I know all of them. Most Filipino parents are like, you know, do this and this is it. And the mayas kandito, pakiramato. Like, oh man, my parents were very good. They were very supportive.
Yeah, especially considering you're immigrants.
I wanted to ask, but did the titas and titas talk shit about you to, you know, your parents? Oh, yung anak ni ganyan, wrestler lang.
You know, my aunties, they're not so pretty. But I think, mahirap kasi when I first started, I was very small. So I was only 60 kilos when I had this wrestling dream, right?
Damn.
And at 18, I was 60. Right now, I'm sitting here at 102 kilos, and I've trained my ass off to get this size. But I was very skinny, and I think a lot of them thought, just let him. It's not going to work, but he's really smart, so he'll land on his feet. You know what I mean? I got very good grades. I was very heavily involved in the community. I'm a youth worker. I did a lot of stuff. So I'm constantly giving back to the community. So I think in their brain, they're like, well, look, wrestling doesn't work out. You know, he's good at talking. He's very charismatic. He'll be fine. He'll land on his feet. But I guess I just been doing this for 17 years now and I haven't grown out of it yet.
You know, as somebody who's in a sort of similar situation, I can almost kind of relate to what you've been through with family and doing something that is off the beaten path here. So I just like you talking about your parents and how supportive they were of your wrestling journey kind of reminds me of my own personal stand-up journey. But I just want to go back to what you said about Lance Storm being your guy, because I think you and I started watching wrestling at around the same time. And for me and for people in my circle of wrestling friends, we all knew of the Shawn Michaels of the world, of the Undertakers of the world. And those were our guys. But you decided to not only pick Lance Storm, but go all the way to Calgary just to train under him. So what drew you to Lance Storm?
Okay, so I did have a lot of influences growing up. But I think, so we only got WCW in Australia. So, and it was playing at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning. So I had friends come over. They'd stay the night on Friday. We'd stay up as late as we could and we'd watch Nitro for 3 hours and fall asleep at 6 a.m. And we'd have like our own little Nitro parties, right? So that's what it was. And I found ECW when they had little clips and you could only watch it online. And we had tape traders in Melbourne. So I would tape trade and I would get some tapes and I'd watch ECW. And I love like Tat, like my five, what like my five, four or five influences growing up. Basically, I watched, obviously, Rey Mysterio was a very big influence on me. I watched Sting. I was obsessed with Sting. And Taz, I loved watching Taz. And obviously, Lance Storm. And then the fifth is Sean and Brett. So those were my main guys growing up. And if you watch a lot of my wrestling style, it is based on those five wrestlers. And I guess, like I said, when I was watching WCW, Lance made his debut and no one at my school, none of my friendships, no one knew who he was. Right. But I was like, yo, that's Lance Storm. He just did a thing with Tommy Dreamer. He did. And I was such a big fan. And because no one knew who he was, I was like, well, I know him. That means I'm different from everyone. And this is my dude. So I would, and then when he started getting his run, he won all three titles. Then I felt all up. I backed the right horse. So, and then obviously he's moved to to WWE, and he had quite a successful career. So for me, everything that I saw of his was so crisp and so clean, and it just seemed effortless. His promos, like, I enjoyed his promos. I enjoyed just, it was something different that they were doing in WCW that everything else felt the same. And for him and for me, I felt, and because I could claim ownership to him, I think that's what drew me to him. So, and the fact that he trained the Heart Dungeon, and Brett was obviously one of my guys, that was another big influence for me. So that's why I think I was drawn to him. And then I think, look, they talk about the universe and throwing things out to fate. I mean, I wrote that stuff in my diary and I manifested it. And next thing you know, I moved to Calgary because the Hearts told me to. Bruce and the couple of brothers told me to move there. And when I got there, they'd sold the Heart House. They told me a couple of things that just wasn't right, but it was too late. I already moved my entire life. I had a 2-year visa and I'm like, I can't just go home. I've been telling thousands of kids through my youth work with Jim Steins, who's a big figure here in the community, telling all these kids to chase your dream and live your dream. And even though I'm 60 kilos, I'm going to go do this. And everyone believed in me. And I went there and I was told I wasn't ever big enough to be a pro wrestler. I was told I'm just going to be a referee or a manager and that I wasn't going to make it. And there's no point. And when you're 18 years old in another country on your own and you get your dream just shattered, like right in front of your face, you're kind of stuck in two questions. You're either, do I just stick it out and push through, or do I just go home? And I couldn't bring myself to go home. I just stayed and I just kept working. I worked two jobs over there. I lived an hour south of Calgary. So it took me ages to get everywhere. And then out of nowhere, Lance decided to stop teaching at an OVW and developmental and open his only one in Calgary the same year that I was there by fate. And I literally, it's a funny story. I literally wrote a resume to him. I put a deposit and I express posted it to his PO box. It cost me I paid $45 for an express post to get it to him. And then a week later, I got a letter back in the mail. And I remember holding it up to the light because I was like, is this the right thing? And I saw my check still in there. And I was like, oh, I didn't get in, man. Like, I didn't make it. And I opened it and it was a receipt. So I did make it.
What a relief.
Right.
And then, open it first.
Oh, mate, look at me. Look at typical filler, right? It's like, oh, I'm about to rip up the paper. I was all depressed. And it said I made it and I was going to be one of his first students in his first class. And that, I still had the letter at home actually and sent my school, that I was in good hands with him. And later that week, he actually called me and he goes, I actually live around the corner from you. If you want, I can drive you to class every morning because you're around the corner. And the crazy thing was he laughs now because I paid $45 for a man to grab it like this and put it where I couldn't put it. Because the post office I was at is the same post office it's around the corner.
Uh-huh.
And he still laughs because you paid about $45 to do what you could have done. I didn't know that, did I? So that was me just panicking. But yeah, so it worked out amazingly because then we would drive to school for almost 30 to 45 minutes every day. And I would, at first I was terrified. I was so scared. I was too scared to say anything. And then we would talk every day and he would drop me off at the station because I'd go to work right after. And it was that every single morning. And then we became friends because I'd see him every day and we talk every day. And I was one of the, there was only five of us in the first class and I picked it up very quickly and I was one of the, top in his class. So, it probably helps that I think maybe our relationship would be different if I wasn't good at wrestling, but I just happened to be, I was good at it and we got along really well. And to the point where he chose me to be in the debut match at Stampede Wrestling. And then he got me my second booking at Stampede Wrestling again. And then he got us booked in this native Canadian reserve, which is 2 hours away in the middle of nowhere. And the promoter was telling him, typical wrestling again, there's going to be 500 people here. It's going to be packed. And at these reserves, I'm not sure if you know, but at these reserves, they all get their welfare check on the same day. And what they do is the promoters run shows on the same day. So they spend their money on the wrestling instead of like food and things are important. Like, oh, horrendous. But they did this. And when we got to the show, there was four people. I wrestled in front of four people, or five if you include Lance. And Lance is filming it and the bleacher's laughing. Like he's giggling. You're giggling. But I'm still doing all my spots and trying to alert the crowd. And there's one dude in the crowd, like he's clapping. He's climbing with me, then he looks around and realizes there's no people, and he just comes by.
No one else in the four person crowd was.
That story reminds me of a horror story that Ro and I actually lived in the early days of the wrestling scene here, where there was this sham promoter who booked us into this covered court that was used as a refugee center for people whose homes had burned down. So they evacuated all the fire victims, set up the ring there, and there were only three paying customers. And everyone who'd been evacuated, they were peering through the chicken wire fence outside.
That is unbelievable. Oh my God, that is crazy. Oh, man. Yeah, we were there. And I remember, it's funny, it's like we left because, of course, I was happy because I'm like, hey, I still got the one guy to clap. There's four of them, and I worked him, and one of them fell. So I remember we left that day. We're driving, and he was asking us what we're doing for Christmas. And I was like, look, man, I get to sleep in. I work two jobs. I haven't seen the sun for like a year because I get up before the sun goes up. And then, you know, I go home when it's down. So I'm like, hey, I get to sleep. And he goes, well, look, I've got a big family Christmas dinner. You know, you're more than welcome to come along and have Christmas dinner with me and my family. There's 13 of us. So, and I was like, I'm going to have Christmas dinner. Okay, that's fine. And now I'm going to embarrass myself because, like, what do you wear? What would you wear? Okay, so let me ask you quickly. If your hero that you've just trained with for 3 months and you've had two matches in front of him, he's very proud of you, and he goes, hey, come to Christmas dinner with his family, what are you wearing?
You have to wear the best that you've got, right?
Right?
Christmas sweater? I think you got to blend in. I mean, like, I don't think anyone's dressing up for Christmas dinner. I think you just got to go in your sweater and stuff like that.
Okay, well, so sweaters and one dress and lines. Well, I didn't know what to wear. So I'm like, I don't even really have clothes there. So I wore a suit. But I wore like,
there you go.
How embarrassing. I wore like slacks and like a dress shirt. And then I knock on the door. He opens it. And he goes, you look nice. And he's just, he's in his jeans and a tank top and a fanny pack. And I'm like, oh, man. And I look and his entire family is just dressed normally. I'm like, well, this is the start. So yeah, I spent Christmas dinner there and got to know his whole family, and it was amazing. And then that's why, because after that, I went back home and surprised my mom for her birthday. And then I went back to Canada for just a 2 week holiday. And I wanted to, like, I'd seen the country. I lived there for almost a year and a half and just wrestled and trained and worked. So I went there for 2 weeks, and Lance had just blown his knee out and had to get a scope in Japan. And he said to me, I just said to him, look, man, like, if you want, I can stay in Canada without a visa for 6 months, right? And I can take all the bumps for you. I just, you know, if you want me to stay, let me know. And his wife was like, Lance is very stubborn. He's going to say no, but can you just stay? Because it'll help him more. And I said, okay, I'll ask him. And I asked him, and he said, yes, can you stay? He wasn't even someone. He was like, yeah, can you stay? And I said, yeah, if you have any hookups, I need a place to stay. So I spent all my money partying and going out and enjoying my life for 2 weeks. And he said to me, look, my kids love you and my wife love you. We have a spare room in our basement. So you can, if you want, you can live at our house. So for 6 months in my first year of wrestling, I was living in Lance's basement, and I'd babysit his kids. We'd go to class every day. I'm back home. He dropped me off for work. He'd give me curfews. It was wild. Like, I remember, you know, we all go in the gym together, and the boys are like, hey, Carl, you going to come hang out? I'm like, yeah, I can. And Lance would be like, what time are you finishing? They're like, he goes, dinner's at 6. I'm like, okay, I'll go. Yes. And they're like, man, Lance's like your dad. I'm like, he is my dad. Like, I can't be late. So, you know, I literally was like, you know, his daughters, they called me the brother they never had. So I was just, yeah, I went from being, you know, this gigantic fanboy growing up to literally being Lance's adopted son.
That's wild.
And that was in my first year of wrestling. Like, I tell everyone, like, in my first year of wrestling, I had well over 600-700 hours of ring time because I did Lance's, I think, three or four times in my first year. So I was helping him teach. So, you know, I spent all my time in the ring learning and just perfecting my craft and trying to understand wrestling because it's so confusing. Wrestling is so hard.
Yes.
And, you know what I mean? And now that I have a school, it's like, well, now you guys can learn the easy way because I can learn the hard way. Just kind of figure it out, you know.
It's wild though, because how many people can say that they lived with a wrestling legend and actually be their adopted son? So I'm pretty jealous of you right now. But
I know.
But I wanted to ask though, you mentioned earlier that you started out at 60 kilograms. So as someone who also started out as a stick, not stick thin, but really thin guy, I wanted to ask, especially for the wrestlers here, because a lot of them are admittedly undersized, and I think they'll agree as well. And fitness is also my special interest when it comes to the business. So I wanted to ask, you are big now. You look like a monster. And I say that in a good way because that's what I want to look like. You look like a legit Japanese Tito from the 80s and the 90s who just look beefy and, you know, could look like they could kick anyone's ass. So how long did that take for you to get to that shape? How much did you have to invest?
I'm telling you, like, listen, at least about 10 years. I'm not going to lie. So I became a personal trainer because I was like, I don't get it. I just don't understand. And I was like, I need to like figure out how to get big. And I'm asking all these gym junkies that aren't helping me. And they're all in the gear. And I'm like, well, that's not helping because I can't do, like, I don't understand what that means. So I became a personal trainer and a massage therapist. So I studied personal training. And then when I was in Canada, when I was over there, I'd meet up with personal trainers and learn. Anywhere I go around the world, I try to meet up with other trainers, learn, and ask other wrestlers and pick up a few things and saw what worked for me. And realistically, I just ate a lot. And I got heavy. I got fat. If you watch throughout my career, you'll see when the phases of changing where I go from this 60 kilo shredded, you know, wrestler to like slowly getting a bit thicker, losing my belly, like losing my abs and getting a bit more of the Filipino Tito belly and then getting bigger and bigger. And then I was like, actually the craziest thing, as I said, last year was probably one of the worst years of my life. I got sick. I was in hospital and they didn't know what it was, but I ended up putting on a lot of weight. I was 137 kilos last year. Right. So this time last year, I just come out of hospital and I was starting to pull weight on and I couldn't eat. My body was like I was just like, my body was just holding fat. And I just knuckled down, put my head down. And today I'm 102. So my gym kilos lost about 35 kilos in a year. But to put on that much size, it was hard. Look, a lot of it, there's no right way of doing it. Like you have, realistically, you're going to be in a calorie surplus. So you have to take more calories than you're burning. And then obviously you have to train the specific way. So I was lifting quite heavy and trying to tear those muscle fibers. And I would even do probably when I started getting the best shape, I was doing twice in days. So I'd be doing hypertrophy, like strength in the morning. So my heavy sessions in the morning and 9 hours later, we're doing hypertrophy later. So, which is just obviously like higher reps. Now I'm just, Funny story. Now, what I post some of my fitness stuff on my close friend's story on Instagram, and some people see it, and I comment on a couple of my buddies. I'm like, man, I'm trying to catch you because they're lifting crazy weights, right? And I started lifting heavy, and my joints were getting sore. This was like the end of last year. And then I'm very lucky that throughout my career and the people I've met, they just happen to, you know, I stay in contact, stay friends with them. And one of the people I met during Stampede Wrestling when I first started was Jinder Mahal. And Jinder and I have been very good friends for such a long time. When he used to come to Melbourne, we'd party together. Now he doesn't party because he's shredded, right?
Yeah.
Like this whole body transformation is incredible. But he was coming to me. He said, Murray, you lift really heavy. I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to. He goes, why do you do that for? I'm like, I don't know. Like, that's a good point. I don't know. He goes, are you joint sore? I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, why don't you try what I'm doing? He trains, I don't think you understand. This guy trains like a machine. Like he tells him, what's your rep range? Like, how do you train? So he says he does from like literally 12 to 25 reps, right? and then does 8 to 12 sets per exercise.
God.
And then I followed one of his back, he did like a back routine on his Instagram. I go, bro, I'll do it, but do your rep range. I was done. That was like, it was like an hour and a half, almost 2 hours. And I burnt well over almost 2000 calories. I was on the floor. This guy trains like I don't, and he does this every day. Oh, I don't understand. He's on another level.
There's no reason for anyone to be doing that much volume. But you mentioned you're doing 2-a-days. So what's your schedule like every day? Because that stuff is usually reserved for like elite pro athletes. Like I hear about it from NBA players, NFL players. So what is your day like that you have enough time to go to the gym 2 times a day?
I don't sleep enough. That's my problem. So these days I try to get my 2-a-days, but if I don't, I'm more resting a bit more, but I'm going harder at the gym. So I work a lot. So as you know, I think this is something that I think all Filipinos have. We have that crazy work ethic. Like we just work. We're not afraid to do whatever work. Like I have 6 jobs, right? So I work. So for instance, my days normally, I'm a personal trainer. So I've got clients from 5 a.m. till about 10. Then I'll probably do my workout about 10 o'clock, 10 or 11. I've got a couple of massage therapy clients that I deal with here in my apartment. Then I'll go, I have my wrestling school. So I teach at night and I have private classes. So most of the times I'm teaching from 5:30 till about 9:30 p.m. And then on Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, I work at a nightclub and do security. And I work there from like 9:30 till 4 a.m. And then I'll sleep for 5 hours or so, maybe. Then I'm up again working. So, like, that's my schedule is like,
that is a crazy fucking schedule, I have to say.
That's going to kill me if I try to do
that.
That
is insane.
Does anybody recognize you at the clubs when you're bouncing?
Some people do. Like, well, it's funny. Like, this is, I feel like a drop out. Look, like, it sounds like a drop out. But, like, I've been very blessed and very lucky that, like, throughout my career, I've met a lot of people from my work ethic, from talking to people. I'm very social. You know, and I try to help as many people as I can. And through my travels and through Lance, Chris Jericho has been a very big influence in my career. He's helped me a lot. He sends, like, you know, he'll text me and give me advice and help me with a lot of stuff. And I remember he happened to be in Melbourne, and I took him to the club I worked at.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, you know, we got all these photos together and the club was very happy that randomly Chris Jericho was in their nightclub and people started showing up. It's a very bougie nightclub. So some people do. I've had some fans come in, but our club is quite bougie. So like Israel Adesanya was there on Friday.
Ooh,
just
wow.
Partying. So we get a lot of like celebrities and stuff to come in. And I look after VIP. So that's where I am in the club. So, I mean, I get some people recognition. But if anything, I probably get more recognized by little kids on the street, to be honest. So like I've had little kids come up to me and or wearing my shirt, which is I still think it blows my brain because I don't think myself as a massive star or anything. I love what I do and I'm very passionate about it. And I think that people forget the most important thing in wrestling is connection. I think people are too busy trying to get themselves over and be really cool and be famous when without fans, you're nothing. So my goal is to I try to connect with every person in the crowd. You know what I mean? And if I'm going to do my gimmick and have my character, then if I'm a heel, I'm not going out to sign autographs. Yeah. You're not going to see me. You know what I mean? I'm not going to shill my merch. It's not about selling and making money. I'm selling my brand. You know? So, I'm trying to, that's what it's always been about. So And again, if I do run into fans, I can try to figure out where they know me from and act accordingly. So right. If they think I'm a heel, then I have to be in there to understand. And then obviously if I'm a baby, then I try to be as nice as possible. But again, it's, I see everything. Charlie Guerrero told us that you're working from the moment you leave your apartment. And I've always carried that. Like as soon as I leave my apartment, I'm in the zone. I'm in my boat and I'm doing my thing. And someone talks to me and it's like, yeah, man, well, I'm actually wrestling and I'm ready to shill and ready to promote and do all that stuff because that's our business, right?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of connection, I've always loved it whenever a wrestler brings their being Filipino into the ring or into whatever show they're part of, which is why I love it whenever Robbie Eagles has the Philippine flag in his gear, right? So have you ever brought your being Filipino into your work as a wrestler?
I have. So there is a few things like, I'm boiling up in here. It's very hot in here. So we used to run in Melbourne. My dad used to be one of the guys that runs the Filipino Fiesta here in Melbourne, and it was quite big. So he would just put wrestling on, and we would have wrestling on at the Fiesta. I've got my Filipino gear that I haven't worn. I should grab it for you. You can have a look at it. I've got my Filipino tights. And like in promos, I would draw Filipino words and say stuff. Normally, because I was the most experienced guy at this Filipino shows, I would have to play heel. And obviously, they want to cheat you because you're Filipino, but I would just go up there and just be just cocky and arrogant and, you know, just tell them how lucky they are that, you know, most Filipinos are finally doing that, but like, oh, blah, blah, you know, and, you know what I mean? I mean, you're lucky that I represent the Filipino community. If not many of us look this good and, you know, you should be cheering me and babami, mogababui. I just call them that. That's all I do. And that's a nice, easy way to get booed in a Filipino festival, let me tell you.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm going to cheer the white guy at a Filipino festival, so. That was when I do it. I would try to add a bit more, like in my promos, I try to add some Filipino words and I'll be doing that more with, I've got some big promos coming up and I'm doing a bit of an Asia tour coming up soon too. So, I should be hopefully up your way.
So, that would be great. You know, we'd love to have you in person, get together, have a beer or three or a bucket or whatever.
Let's go.
But, you know, speaking of the Filipino community, right, have you connected with the other Australian wrestlers with Filipino connections like Robbie or like Shane Hayes, who's married a Filipino?
Yeah, well, Robbie and I are very good friends. Robbie, we've gone way back. Like, I remember I got a gig in Singapore, a lucha gig, and I pushed to get him on it. So we've always been super tight. Robbie and I, we actually have, I haven't shown you a photo of us throughout the years because Robbie, it's like he's a vampire because he doesn't age.
Yes.
Right. But if you look at the four photos of us, as we go through it, he doesn't look like he ages one bit. And I significantly just get bigger in size and it almost looks ridiculous. But I'll have to send you guys that photo so you can have a look at it. Robbie and I get along really well. And it's good because we wrestle quite different styles now. We wrestle a lot early on in our careers. And Shane, I've had many matches with Shane. Shane's a wild one. He's a very interesting one partying with both these boys a lot. Robbie would come down to Melbourne and just hang out. So, and whenever Robbie's in Melbourne, I get to see him, which is always super nice. And I'm like, there isn't too many, Filipino wrestlers in Australia just yet, unfortunately. I mean, look, in all honesty, the wrestling here is slowly growing. For me, I feel like the scene is in Southeast Asia. Like, that's where I think it is. I honestly believe it's going to boom and it's about to blow up. And since now I'm working with LPW, as you see, with the world title, I want to carry, like, my goal this year is to carry Southeast Asia on my back. And I want to like get eyes to it and use my connections and my brand and my name to make everyone look over here. Like when Jericho asked me, where should we be looking? I said, Southeast Asia. I told him to his face.
Yes.
And I said, this is where you should be looking because there's untapped talent there. The crowds are incredible. Because I think a lot of times too, like it's still real to a lot of the people, like in Asia, it still feels real. And I guess one thing that I feel is lacking in wrestling these days is just is the realism. It doesn't feel like it. I'm very big on my strikes. I'm very big on making everything feel legit. I want you to question whether I'm killing someone or not. I want people to question if this is who I am in real life or not. Like that's my goal. I can't make you believe that, you know, everyone's like, oh, wrestling's this, wrestling that. But I can guarantee you, I'm not going to show how, you're not going to know how you feel when you leave after seeing me. And that's what I've been trying to push really hard for. And I think Asia's the place for it. And I don't think, especially after I was in Malaysia, then a couple of guys from Singapore down, all the other Singaporean promotions, and they saw me work and they're like, okay, this is different. And I've been working so hard for it. So, I want to come see you guys. I want to come over there and I want to come show you my brand of violence that, I think it's exclusive to what I do. But yeah, I mean, look, if I can get a holy shit chant from a punch and not doing a crazy Canadian off the top rope or anything, I think I'm doing something right. You know what I mean?
Really quickly, the Filipino audience here is great. You'll love it. But what about the Filipino community there? Because you said you were performing in front of them, but how do they react to the wrestling? Because pro wrestling isn't always like the most popular sport in the Philippines or among Filipinos.
They loved it here. They loved it. Because I think for them, it's like, we're very traumatic people. Let's not lie. Filipinos are the most dramatic Filipino women, but let's not go there. A very dramatic people, right? Mga drama, right? So
yes,
we like that. We like any reason to just more say, you know, you, that's what they love. And I think that's why wrestlers and wrestling love it. I think the Filipino community just don't know enough about it. And I think it's just the exposure's not there. And I think that's just on a worldwide thing. I think that like, I feel that. I think if WWE even or AEW went to the Philippines, they'd still draw and do really well. I think people just don't know that it's around or local stuff is around or, you know, it just feels minor league in comparison. It's the same here. Like, we'll have local shows that draw 300-400 people maybe, and then you'll have the international guys come in and do tours, and they'll sell out, you know, and get like 10 times more people with a higher cost price. And I think it's just that – and locally, we just don't treat our products with the same respect that they should. And sometimes you need those international names or you need a bit of buzz to kind of draw eyes to the local talent, but you still got to put the local talent over and put them over these international guys. That's what I think. Because then if we look like we can compete on that stage, then suddenly we're elevated. But if you keep bringing international guys in and they're just beating all your local guys, well, then what's the point? You know what I mean? If there's someone they go, hey, he looks like me, or he's Filipino, and he's doing really well, maybe I can do that. Or maybe, you know what I mean? And I think that we just don't have that. Maybe I'm not sure what it's like. The scene's there. I know Crystal, and I know Jake DeLeo, and I love them both, and they're amazing people. And I've loved, I keep telling JDL, I'm coming there to beat him up. I'm coming. Go get ready, bro. I see he's on his weight loss journey. He looks amazing.
Yes,
bro. I told you, I'm going get stacked, bro, because I'm coming. So you know that's something where like you can. They should be on the forefront of showing these young kids that like this is what we're doing. I think the marketing should be to kids as well. I think kids are the future. That's where you should be. You know what I mean? They're the ones that make the most noise. They're the ones that are most excited. Plus, if you bring a kid, they have to bring a parent. That's right. Two people. Right? You know what I mean? And teenagers and stuff, they're going to come anyways. Wrestling fans are going to come anyways. So we shouldn't be marketing out to people that are going to come anyways. Should be marketing to people that don't know what wrestling is or could be flicking through and give them a reason to come down. So I think that's why I want to go there because I think that's my appeal. I think I look different to other Filipinos, but I am Filipino. So I think that's why it's a bit, there's an appeal there. And I think that's what's missing. In most of the, I think, markets all over the world, you just got to have someone that you can put as your face and go, this is the guy, I'm seeing him. We don't have any draw cards. I think that's what's like.
Right. So I want to go back to a few things you mentioned at the top of all of this. You mentioned all your work with Landstorm and Landstorm Academy and all the connections you've made along the way and how important these connections are to you. Have you ever thought about giving bigger, more popular promotions a shot? Like, say, going for the WWE or going for something like WCW, AEW, during the course of your career?
100%. I've done a couple of WWE tryouts back when they were not – this is before Performance Center stuff. So it was 10 times more nerve-wracking because – would show up there on Raw on a Monday You'd be there as an extra. They'd tell you what's going on and see if they needed you. And then on the Tuesday at SmackDown before Raw, before SmackDown starts, you're having a match in front of all the wrestlers.
Right.
And the agents. And I've done that a few times. And I always got amazing feedback. But the problem is I'm just not there long enough for them to do anything, really. You know what I mean? Regal, I was very lucky for Regal to put me over and say some amazing things. I remember IRS said some really good things about me. They were putting me over, you know, but it's just you need to be over there longer and get some eyes on you for a lot longer to do it. I was there for 3 months. And probably one of the best promoters in the US, his name's Dave Marquez. He runs Championship Wrestling from Hollywood and franchised it out to Arizona and stuff. This man is a wrestling genius. It's been everywhere. And I've learned so much from him. And he always said great things about putting over. He said to me, you did more here in 3 months than our local guys do. And I'm like, because I'm hungry. We don't really get those. We're so far away that like we don't get seen. So I'm running around doing everything. I'm meeting people. I'm putting my best foot forward. I'm also trying to not steal any spots on the card and play my role, but also doing what they say and trying to stand out and be different. You know, and I did a couple of stints with WWE, like a couple of tryout matches, and again, it was good feedback. But the hardest thing too, to think about it, I probably wasn't in the best shape that I was. Like I was a bit smaller, and being short, like look, now it's a lot shorter in the industry now, right? Yeah. So, look, if I broke it, I think life would be very different, right? And I think that you know, but you can't think that way. You're gonna go look either, again, as they say, adapt or perish. So. That's all I'm doing. I'm getting in the best shape that I've ever been in. You know, I've got this Malaysian World Championship that I want to, you know, I plan to defend all over the world and make it a proper world championship. I have goals to take over Southeast Asia, and I feel that that's my pathway to getting to those bigger promotions, because once the world wakes up and realizes that Southeast Asia is the place to be, they're going to go, who's the guy there? And I'm planning to be that guy.
Carlo, I remember we asked Robbie this when we last had him on, and I want to ask you this next question. What is it about this generation of Australian wrestlers where a lot of you are really making waves on all these big stages, from people like Rhea Ripley to Toni Storm to Grayson Waller, Indy Hartwell, and everybody in your generation of guys and girls?
I think that a lot of people that came early opened the doors for a lot of people, and then these guys were had the balls enough to go run and do it because they saw that it was possible. When I first broke in, no one had gone overseas. When I started, there was no opportunity. I remember I got heat, believe it or not, I got heat for training overseas.
From the Australian wrestling community?
What?
Correct. They said to me that, because they were like, he thinks he's too good to train here. We'll show him how we do it here. And when my first year of coming back here, I got my head kicked in. And I'd shake their hand and go, thank you very much. Any feedback? I just stayed humble and kept going at it. And eventually, you can't deny talent, you can't deny hard work, and you can't deny the crowd cheering for you. And so when I'm getting cheered and getting pushed and more people are coming, then you have no choice but to realize I'm not a dick. See what I mean? That they come around. So I had to really earn my spot. I think this new generation comes through, taught by guys like myself, taught by Robbie, and showing how you can do this. And a lot of the mistakes that were taught, like the guys earlier on, aren't there anymore. They've been corrected. And people have opened pathways and connections and doors for them to go over there and see it. And then WWE came over here and I'll try out here. And they did stuff. They go, hey, you know what? Maybe we'll try it. And then when a couple of Australians got signed in the first few tryouts, it was like, shit, maybe there's a shot for these guys. And those guys all got signed through these tryouts because they came and saw that they realized there's talent here. But I think a lot of times they didn't realize that there was, again, you didn't know that there was people here. You didn't know there was talent here.
Right.
But now you do. And I feel like that's where Asia is at the moment. I think it's the same. They just don't know.
I was going to follow up to that by asking if you've ever considered like going on TV like Matty Wahlberg did when he did Survivor. Like, would you do SAS or Australian Survivor just to, you know, get more exposure for the Australian scene as it is?
I mean, look, I'm not opposed to it. I think I have a very... interesting personality. I'm not sure. I think I'm a bit polarizing. So I'm not sure if it might hinder me. I'm like into the Australian scene. I don't know. Maybe it might be. Look, I'm not opposed to it. This year, I'm really trying to do that kind of stuff and grow my social media presence and grow a lot of that stuff. Because I think a lot of times especially a lot of us too, we spend so much time like focusing on our craft and our talent and our training and our ability. But this is such a different world now. So it's all about, you can get something like, again, this is a good example. I won't name names, but there's someone that was working for WWE, not contracted, but they were working there. And I said to them, well, they seem to really like you. Like, are they going to sign you or not? They said to me, they like me a lot, but they said there's 10 of me out there in the Indies with more followers than I do. So if they sign them, they're at least bringing 10,000, 20,000 people. So when I tell my students, right, because I tell my students, I'm not a coach or a teacher that now then, you know, I teach because I can't make it. No, I'm chasing hard and I'm telling you what I'm doing so you can do the same. I try to lead by, that's why I work so hard. That's why I work those six jobs, right? Because if I tell these kids, hey, if I can work six jobs and lose 30 kilos and still look jacked, and you're telling me you have one job and you can't train, don't talk to me about wanting to chase your dream. Don't talk about working hard if you're not willing to put the work in. If I'm doing this now, then you have no excuse. All right. So I try to lead by example. So it's the same thing with the social media and all that stuff. It's like, well, then if I tell my guys, if it's between you, who's unbelievably talented and can do amazing stuff, or the guy that's not that great, but has 20,000 followers, these big companies go, sign the guy at 20K, we'll teach him to be better.
Right.
Because he brings 20,000 people with him, right? That's why the Logan Paul thing is the smartest thing they've ever done, because he's obviously great, he's talented, and people say he hasn't paid his dues. He's been paying his dues since he started YouTube. He's built that following. He's done athletic stuff. He fought Floyd Mayweather. Like this guy is, you know what I mean? So they can't be mad at him for it because he's bringing so many eyes to the product. And that's what a draw card is. So in wrestling, I tell my guys this all the time, and this is what I've always believed. We're the only industry I feel in the world where you don't need to be good at wrestling to make it. Yeah, right? Because if you're Usain Bolt, you are the fastest and you can be Nick, you may not be good at like interviews, you can have the worst dress sense. You may not even be in shape. If you're the fastest, you're the fastest, period. But in wrestling, you could be the single most talented professional wrestler that connects and books people. But if you can't talk, you're not going to make it. Right. If you don't look like you can win a fight, there's no point, right? So you have to have a complete package. And I think a lot of the guys now, and I think that's why, to answer that question earlier, why they've blown up is because they've understood this and realized it. They've understood that, yes, wrestling is still at the end of the day part of the marquee, but you need to have this worldwide appeal and this X factor for people to go, I want to see more of that person. I need to see them. I want to follow them. I want to be part of their life. I want to know what they're doing. And you only get to do that by sharing more of who you are. It's like this voyeurism thing. They love it. They want to watch. They want to see. They want to see blogs. They want to podcast. They want to do all that stuff. So I think that's what the X factor is. So yeah, I mean, look, I'm open. I've been saying yes to everything this year. That's one of my mantras. I just don't say no. So I'm not sure if that's going to get me in trouble, but it's definitely created some great stories this year for me, just saying yes to everything.
Last couple of things before we wind down here. You know, you've alluded to your connection to MyPW, and I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't ask how MyPW beat us to you.
It's Emma. Well, actually, look, Emma came to Australia and he put a tweet out there of like coming, and then someone told me that there's this Malaysian kid that is looking for training, and I just said, look, my doors are always open. So we came down, we clicked. We have this joke because you know, obviously Malaysians as well as we all look very similar. Yeah. I said he rocked up at my door, and like he just I said he's like my son. I'll go, you look like you know, maybe I had an affair in Malaysia and, you know, came to my front door with a photo of me saying, Papa, and, you know, he's really good at wrestling, so he carried the jeans. But he is unbelievably talented, this kid, right? So he came down, and then we worked out a deal because he wanted me to go over and wrestle for YPW. So I went over there, and we wrestled each other, and that German suplex I got on him went viral. And my meeting will be like, well, you just put our name on the mat with one move. And so everyone was talking about us. And then I did a couple of shows up there. Then during COVID, there was an incident with their former coach, and my PW was kind of left for dead. And I decided to help out where I could. And I said, look, I'll coach all your students for free. Just make sure all their fees go to your school to rebuild my PW. And during COVID, for probably 2.5 years, I've been teaching online for free for the past, like, every week, right? So their new breed of students are incredible. They ask some of the incredible questions. And my online classes I run every week, they're open to all wrestlers all over the world. I've got people from Singapore, all over Australia and Malaysia and all that stuff joining in, just watching and learning. And you know, all the money goes to help my PW. And then they ran their first show running back for after 2 years. And that was the show that I wrestled. And they were crowning and champion. So I'm very lucky that the bookers and the people there decided to put me as their face. And I don't take it very lightly. I've got a couple of shows coming up. Like I'm going to be wrestling for SPW in August. So I'll be wrestling there in Singapore. And then for setup in September or totally in Thailand.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then I think I might be going back to Malaysia probably at the end of July or August. And then hopefully I need to come see you guys. So maybe we can tee something up and do that. But that's my plan to take over Asia. I've been hit up by a couple of companies in Taiwan and Korea and all that kind of stuff too. And Dubai want me over there as well. So look, there's a couple of things going on and I'm loving just getting to travel and wrestle and put my brand of wrestling out there, what I think wrestling should be. But yeah, that's how my PW beat you guys. I mean, you're going to just know my DMs are open.
Yeah, but, as we all discovered.
No, but I gotta ask though, because I think we have to ask. I don't know. I apologize if it already happened, but have you tried to come here?
My family, my mom used to actually bring down a lot of the artists down to Australia to perform. So we actually have a lot of connections over there with like big name producers and all that kind of stuff. And I have been asked to go over to do TV and movies and stuff over there. The only problem is like they want me to stay there for like 3 to 6 months. And it's just hard to get that kind of time off. Because I'm down to do movies and stuff over there. That'd be great. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think I'm very much more open to do it now. I believe I think Crystal actually tried to get me over there to work her at one point for one of the companies. But I think nothing, I think either if it was COVID or something, I think COVID cut a lot of things off, but, I'm very keen to work in the Philippines. I've been so many times, I've been back in 7 years. And again, with the people that I know over there, I'd love to bring more eyes to the product. The big thing that I want to do is just like, I've worked so hard. I've got all these connections and accomplishments. And I just want to help add value. My life at the moment is just adding value to wherever I go and to anyone that I meet and to promotion. So if I can make your promotion better, if I can get more eyes to it, if I can do this, of course, there's beneficial stuff to me because I'm going out there, but it's more of like, I feel that if you're always in abundance of giving, things just come to your way anyways. So yeah, I've thrown the line out there. So hopefully if anyone wants me over there, I'm always down.
And for wrestling students or wrestlers here in the Philippines who want to enroll in your online classes, what can they expect?
So we cover literally everything, right? Lately, we've been doing a lot of Q&A because there's a couple of things that get a bit confusing, but we break down everything from match structure to character development. I will help break down your characters and why everything, like the motives. We go through like... cadence and speed and tone in terms of how to come promos properly. We do some media training because a lot of people don't know how to talk to the media. I'm sure you guys mm-hmm. have been guests on podcasts and don't even know how to hold a conversation or even like give you one word answers. I probably talk too much and go on tangents.
No, you're fine.
a lot better than some.
and just like things like we cover everything. So I'll break down how to put a match together. Why? Like everything we do in wrestling, there's a why. We don't just do it. Right. But people just go, oh, that's just how it is. Or you ask them a question and they just get angry at you for asking the question. Right. But me, if I don't know the question, I'll just text one of the guys I know and find out from them why we do stuff, why we step with a certain foot, why we do this a certain way. You know what I mean? And there's a reason. as to why we do everything. So with the online classes, everything that we do is for that. And the thing is too, again, I've been doing this now for, this is my 18th year, and I've been teaching for 10 years. So it's not just like wrestling knowledge. It's like I've been learning on how to teach people to have them to understand what I'm talking about. Because it's one thing to be good at wrestling, but it's another thing to be able to teach it. And I'm so passionate about what we do and why we do it and trying to keep the magic of what we do special that I just want people to understand and go out there best equipped. Because at the end of the day, if we send people out there not ready, it damages the product. It damages everything that we're doing, right? Because so you can meet me today and see this. And when I get out to the ring, you're like, that was not what I expected. When I got my contacts on and I'm ready to purge and I'm in my zone, it's like you forget everything else. And that's the magic of what we do. Our goal is to take people away for 20, 10, 30 minutes that they have during that match and make them forget about all their problems, all their issues, and live vicariously through us, through a, you know, good guy, bad guy story, or whatever story we're trying to tell, and have them connect. And I know when I hear 1, 2, oh, I've got it. And that's what I live for. And my goal in these online classes is to reach a vast majority of as many wrestlers as I can that are willing to learn and be coached to get better. That's it. Most don't do it because they have an ego. They think they know everything. That's fine. I don't want to teach you. I don't care. That just means that I'm going to overtake you anyways. I don't mind. Like, I don't get mad or upset at other wrestlers that steal stuff and you know, talk shit. Honestly, I don't mind. It just means that, like, and the people that go out there and do crazy stuff and kill high spots and go do it. It's fine. You're eliminating yourself. I don't need to do it. You know what I mean? If I can, again, in Malaysia, I got over with a punch. I punched someone and they chanted, holy shit. Now, if I can do that, then I don't need to do anything else. It's about connection. And I think that's what we forget is the most important thing.
And if our listeners or anybody who finds this clip wants to enroll in your classes or get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
No, you can just slide in my DMs. I'm going to find you. Slide in. You can drop me there or you can always send me an email to carlocannonsite@gmail.com. But yeah, I'm on the gram a lot. So, and I try to get back to everyone and answer everyone. And, you know, I think being somewhat accessible to most people. But yeah, most people, I'll just reply to them in my DMs. You guys can send my DMs. Yep. But I gotcha.
All right. Yeah.
All right. I think that's a great way to end the interview. Carlo Cannon, thank you so much for sharing all those insights, all those stories with us. We're so happy that we finally got to connect. And man, we can't wait to have you on our shores and to share a bucket of San Miguel with you.
Oh, hey, you tell me when and I'll be there. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Carlo Cannon for stopping by the pod and taking time out of his really, really busy schedule. Again, the man has 6 jobs.
Oh, grabe. I cannot fathom myself having to do 6 jobs. Like, I do these jobs, but I spread them out and not, you know, like in one day. So, goddamn.
But in fairness to Carlo Cannon, he still had time for all of us and all our questions. Thank you for clearing your schedule, Carlo.
Yeah, like we said on the pod, we're so excited to eventually meet him, hopefully before this calendar year ends. And hopefully, you know, the companies that we work with are able to make something happen. So here's us pulling a Rowan ASH and just manifesting it out there into the universe.
And to hopefully talk to his friends, his very famous friends that he mentions on the pod.
So, yes, good one. Buti rin na sinama ni Chino sa pag-manifest namin. Now, we just need Rowan to say it so it will come true. All right, we'll catch you again on another episode of the Wrestling Podcast, whether it's the audio-onlys or the picks of the week or the regular Thursday live stream every 7 p.m., again, on Thursdays. But if you want to follow us on social media, you know where to find us. It is at Wrestling2XPod on TikTok and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify, the Wrestling Podcast, and individually, it is at Roazwar, at Gina Supersized, at EML_Meister, at Monday Night Rowan, and at _Stancy. On behalf of our guest, Carlo Cannon, Ro Moran, and Gina Liao, my name is Stancy. We're out of here. Stay safe, stay healthy, and don't be a dick. Wrestling Podcast, out.
Peace.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia, the hosts of the program, or other programs of the network. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.